Welcome to the Interviews Podcast.
Welcome, Interisti, to episode 78 of the Interviews Podcast. We are here for the post-match reaction of Udinese Inter, which finishes 2-1 to the visitors. Goals from Lazar Samardzic in the 40th, Hakan Çalhanoğlu in the 55th on a penalty, and Davide Fratesi once again, his third goal in extra time out of the six that he scored this season in the 95th minute. As always, I am one half of your co-hosting duo, Alessandro Raffa, joined here by Johnny Paterno. Today was a solar eclipse day. We are still here, despite many of the theories and stories going around recently about the eclipse. If you were on Twitter during the game and you're an Interista, you might have thought the world was ending, but somehow, some way, we have found a way to get the 3 points here, stretch our lead at the top. Not stretch our lead, actually. We could maintain our lead at the top with 7 games to go here. As the season, you know, starts winding down, of course, we want to make sure that we bring on the best possible guest for you guys. Johnny, who's joining us today?
Joining us today, the guy who was able to double up his money today, actually. We just found out. Betting on Inter, none other than Nick Diani from Kicks and Picks podcast and of famed Bologna fandom.
Yeah, the only
one.
Doing,
buddy?
What's going on, boys? Thank you for having me back.
All right, a lot to get into. A Pazza Inter performance, for sure. A Pazza Inter performance. The fans, man. Oh, it's tough. It's tough. We just picked up our 26th win out of 31 matches this season, and you wouldn't know it if you were just living on Twitter and not watching the game. So really happy that we pulled that one out just for everyone's sanity. And to kick off the discussion, I want to read out some records, some stats, some stuff that we can have a little fun with. All right. Most points away from home in Europe's top 5 leagues, Inter with 41 points. The only team to have not conceded a goal in the first 15 minutes in Europe's top leages, Inter. Udinese have avoided defeat in the last 12 games in which they scored the first goal of the match in Serie A. Today, that ended. A lot of things going on. I can keep going with these stats, but it's just...
You forgot the best stat. That
Which
I saw
one?
At least so far.
I got
the first
more
team in Serie A history to have scored a goal in their opening 31 matches.
A record. Yep.
Yeah.
That's one of them. A record. Çalhanoğlu, first time into double figures in his Serie A career, converted his last 14 penalties in Serie A. Inter, the only team in Serie A with at least 3 players with double figures this season. Lautaro, Thuram, and Çalhanoğlu. Again, I can keep going, but all of this to put into context, we're witnessing a really special season from Inter, still on track for potentially securing the record of 103 points. You know, usually I always kick it over to Johnny, but I think it's good to get a little outside perspective on Inter's season, despite the fact that today wasn't the best performance. Nick, like, you know, you're watching this season unfold. How do you feel about this Inter team?
Yeah, I feel like I'm repeating myself every time I come on the show, but my feelings are exactly the same. To me, the mark of a great team is to pick up 3 points when you don't play at your best, when you don't necessarily deserve it. And you hit the nail on the head. You threw those stats out there. I mean, this team could have very easily mailed this game in. They could have been on cruise control. They could have maybe even been happy with a 1-1. And that wasn't the case. And I think, you know, I said it wasn't their best performance, but they still pretty much dominated the game. But getting those 3 points, this is not something we see with every single team. So to me, that's really the mark of this Inter squad. They don't ever give up. They don't ever think they're out. And, you know, personnel may or may not be up to par. They're not going to play their best game every single game, but they found a way today. So, you know, like you said, stay off social media, go watch the game, and you'll see, I think, the things you need to see out of this 90 minutes or 95 minutes, whatever it was.
Johnny, last time out, we spoke about a dip in energy, you know, potentially mentally, these guys are exhausted here. Did that carry over into this game for you, or was it simply a matter of we dominated the game, they stacked the box with 11 players, and it was always going to be tough like this?
I mean, I think if you look at the first half, there was definitely a dip mentally. I felt like there was a lot of guys running around who just didn't really seem to be in it. A lot of sloppy passes early on from Barella, Mkhitaryan, Thuram. I mean, just misplaying balls left and right.
Çalhanoğlu misplayed a lot. Acerbi.
Yeah. Hakan actually misplayed the ball that actually led to the goal. You know, it's, yeah, just mental errors we weren't seeing in the beginning of the season. And I do think it's because of Inzaghi's unwillingness to rotate as much as he probably should. You know, I know that we want to continue to pursue this opportunity to set the most points in a Serie A season, which we can still do. We'd have to win out, of course, but I think you also need to think about your team for the long run, though. You know, I think it's very difficult when you continue to play the same midfield trio time and time again, you know, not being able to bring in a guy like Aslani, not being able to start. Now, granted, we know what Fratesi does impact-wise when he comes off the bench, but you could see it. Our starting two forwards, they haven't looked like themselves in over a month now, and it's a little worrying. Thank goodness that we were able to get goals from different people today, of course. But you know, like, we do have a big game coming up in the Derby. You don't want to lose that. You won. What are we up to? 6 now in a row, honestly, in all comps. We did 5 last year in the calendar year. So you want to continue that streak, and you also would love to just be able to clinch the title against them. That would be such bragging rights to get your second star, but he just continues to roll out the same 11 time and time again, and I'm kind of happy Lautaro and Pavard picked up yellows, because I think that's going to be some needed rest, and also leaves them fresh for the Derby game.
Interesting that you'd be happy that the one game that I'm going to be at San Siro this year, that Lautaro and Pavard are going to be missing. That's you sound super excited about it. I have to go out there and watch Arnautovic and Alexis for 90 minutes, but sure. No problem.
It's the last chance you'll get to see them, maybe.
Last time you get to see Alexis start in an Inter kit. I mean, don't you want to be a part of that?
I mean, look at the trophies he's won with the Inter. I'm seeing a legend.
A natural champion. You know, he's won more for Inter than our famed captain Ranocchia has ever won. Icardi, too, for that matter. So, maybe he is an Inter legend if you really want to boil it down. But you also might be able to see Buchanan start. So I think that's a win, right?
You know, I'm actually not. I'm not upset about the Pavard one. You know, most of all from the situation, because I'm interested in seeing Bisek up and close in person, and how that looks. So, yeah, should be good. I want to touch on
quick while we're just on the topic of you going to Cagliari game.
Mm-hmm.
Can you share with our listeners what you're going to do there?
We have interviews, has some stickers, you know, like the ones that you see on people's laptops and stuff. The plan is to put a sticker on San Siro somewhere in the stadium. I would like to do it outside on the thing, but we're going global. We're going worldwide with this thing. So
I don't think I've ever been more excited to see where a sticker is going to end up in my life. And that's kind of ridiculous of me to say that, but I'm pumped.
It's exciting, and hopefully this is something that we can do every year. And Johnny, next year, you know, hopefully we can see a game and hopefully another great season. So I'm excited to be there. But I do, you know, speaking about this match, I want to touch on a tweet from Nima that came during halftime. He said, There's no doubt the intense fixture list in January through March has led to Inter running out of steam these past couple of weeks, where pretty much every Inter player continuously and repeatedly makes simple, unforced errors, as well as being hesitant, like for Udinese's goal, something Inzaghi and co. need to manage better and improve for next season. And Johnny, you talked about it. You talked about it a little bit as far as like Inzaghi not rotating guys who are clearly in need of some rest here, but do you think that this is, you know, we talked last year about Inzaghi's substitutions and stuff like that, his growth as a manager. Do you think there is another level for this coaching staff and for this team to reach, despite the fact that this season itself is as perfect, as close to a great season as you could possibly have?
I do think there is still a little bit, you know, more that can be done to be able to, one, rotate better, but also be able to compete on all three fronts. You know, when we saw early in January, like Nima was saying, the lack of rotation there and the heavy fixture list, I get that the priority was, of course, to win as many games as you can against those tough teams that we were going up against, to be able to, well, at that time we had a small lead in the Scudetto race, but you wanted to maintain it, and now look what we were able to grow it to. But I think that also took away a little bit from the intensity that we were able to bring to the Champions League. Like, you look at what we did in the group stages, kind of an underwhelming performance there. And I feel like that was because they just were kind of mailing it in and kind of expected to kind of coast into the round of 16. And then anything from after that would be a bonus. Now you have to be able to compete on all three. You know, like, you want to be able to win a treble. You want to be able to, I mean, yes, that's the ultimate goal. Maybe not even win it, but at least be able to compete for it. You know, we were out of the Scudetto race, and then we were able to focus on the Champions League last year. Now, today, I mean, this season, we're focusing on the Scudetto, and then we're not so much focused on the Champions League. I want to be able to be competitive in all three fronts. You know, you look at teams like Manchester City, Bayern, maybe not so much this year, but in years past, like, they've been all been able to compete, or at least be in the running for a treble. And I think that's the next level he needs to reach. Listen, I'm not taking away anything from what Inzaghi has done. I know I've been very critical of him in the past, but he has definitely shown improvements year after year. Yes, a really rough start his first year, probably a lot of mistakes as a young manager taking over such a storied club like Inter. Then last year, you see a little bit of a regression in the league, but then growth in the Champions League, and be able to have the ability to go toe-to-toe with some of the best teams in Europe. And now this year, you have the laser focus in the league. You have the guys all wound up. And again, I'm not gonna blame him for the performances on the pitch. You know, you are entrusting your veterans to be able to be successful and to continue to improve their game. Unfortunately, they seem to be winded. I think he needs to learn how to recognize that so that they can get the best out of them for the duration of a season and potentially in three fronts. But I do think that he is trending in the right direction, so I can't be too critical.
And Nick, I think you're uniquely suited to answer this question, having followed, you know, having seen Inzaghi's career up close for the entirety of his managerial career. Are you, watching this Inter play, do you feel like there is another gear to hit for Inzaghi, or is this sort of, you know, the peak where we're going to start to see, like Johnny said, there's always like this regression that can happen. What do you expect from Inzaghi at Inter moving forward?
No, I think it's the former. I think he's a guy that's smart enough to know that there's always room to evolve. You know, the great managers are the ones that do that. They're still around, right? Listen, with Lazio, I give him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt because that was a limited squad, right? He had a rotation of maybe 13.
Joaquin Correa was
limited. he had a smaller budget. He had a much smaller squad, and
I don't even know if he had a smaller budget, to be honest.
Yeah, fair enough. but no, you said, you know, his first year at Inter, that there was a bit of a learning curve, and the only thing you guys could hope for is that he does make some of those adjustments, and I think he's done a decent job of that. I think Inter is unique in Serie A that they have depth at most positions, where not many squads can say that. But I do think, you know, you had a tough fixture list where you want to put your best foot forward, you know, a couple months ago, and they don't have the depth that maybe we think they have in certain positions. You know, I've talked about it with you guys a ton. You know, the way they're playing this year, you're not really able to substitute for Hakan. You're not able to do that for Barella. You're not able to do that for Lautaro and Thuram. So, you know, while they have the depth, the drop off in some of those positions is pretty steep. So it's, you know, Johnny mentioned the teams, right? City, Real Madrid, maybe Bayern. Those are teams that can really have quality starting players that can go start on 95% of teams on the planet, be on the bench, game in and game out. Inter's not quite there yet. They're close. I think they have starters on the bench. There's no question about it. But to me, you know, forward depth is really what they need to address this offseason. And, you know, can Inzaghi take that next step forward? That's what you guys are going to need to see from him. I think that's what you're going to look to see from him. I definitely agree with what you're saying.
And I think part of that, part of the reason why that is the case is when you stick to one system and you have like a rigidity as far as tactics are concerned, like City, Bayern, and Real, they will play different formations to fit different guys in throughout the season. Like they'll switch up their tactics. It's not, you know, rooted in a specific formation, whereas Inter, that isn't the case, right? You know, there was never an attempt to play like Lauti, Mkhitaryan, with Mkhitaryan behind him, as opposed to having to bring on, you know, Alexis and Arnautovic for some games. After Çalhanoğlu, you're going to Aslani, and that is because you refuse to change your tactical flexibility a little bit in order to incorporate the players that are at your disposal.
That's a fair criticism, 100%.
Yeah, and it's been that way for him for a long time, but also the results have been devastating when he does have all of his guys available. So, you know, we'll see if that is something that he's able to work on with his team in the future. Last question I have before we dive into this game. I've been thinking about this a lot recently. Inter management was so vocal about the second star during the summer in the lead up to the season. Like they were very actively saying that is our objective for the season. That's where we're heading to. Next year, right? Let's say everything works out as far as the transfer strategy is concerned. Taremi and Zielinski come in, we invest in some areas, and the team doesn't lose any big players. Do you think that the club should come out with a mandate for what their objective, like actively put that in the media? Because I think something that happened is like, it's given us a way out as far as the Champions League is concerned, where we're able to say, oh, you know, we didn't really care about this. The objective was the second star. It's also allowed other fan bases like Juve and Milan to like really, really, really want us to slip up at any, that, you know, they're always going to want us to slip up, but using that, you know, second star going out the window thing, do you want to see Inter be as vocal about what their objective is next season? And Nick, for you, like, do you think there is value in doing that as a club where you essentially, you could be setting yourself up for, you know, epic failure?
I'll go first. I think as long as your goals are realistic, I think it's the right move. I think, you know, for a club like mine, they're fighting for top four. Was that a realistic goal before this season? Maybe people thought so. Maybe some people didn't. But I think you have to give your players something to work towards and set a defined goal. I do think that helps. I think you need to keep the fans honest, so to speak, right? If your goal is to win the league, and there's three teams that probably, you know, year in and year out can go out and say they have a realistic shot to do it, and you don't, I mean, we see how fans, whether they're fans of your team, fans of other teams that you name, we see how they react, right? So can it hurt more than it helps? I think so, but I think in this case the results are there, right? This is as good of a league season, as a campaign, as you guys could have possibly hoped for, but all the ingredients were there to make it happen. So I think it was definitely a positive for this season.
For me, it's kind of tough because, yeah, I do think that it kind of sets expectations for sure. But I also think it kind of limits you. You know, I mean, it kind of gives players an out, like you said, you know, Alessandro, like, all right, cool. We've reached the objective. Now, if we don't do the rest of the stuff that we would like to do, it's okay. And I don't want that to ever be a thing. Now, that may be you. Maybe you could say that amongst yourselves in the dressing room and kind of like, you know, do it that way. I think when you share it to the media, it kind of also lets other clubs know what your intentions are. And it kind of also could, you know, create some situations where then, hey, like, we know that this is their goal. We can actually charge them more for this player. Or, hey, like, we know that this is their goal. We can kind of shortchange them because, you know what, they got to make some money. They got to be able to get certain things out of their whatever, their rotation to kind of be able to rejuvenate the squad. So I'm on the fence with it, honestly. I could see the benefits. I could also see the detractions to it. So it's like, you know, what really do you do in that? I don't know what the right answer is. You know, clearly I've seen from people on Twitter that I'm not really a calcio pundit. So, you know, like, I got to be careful with what I say on this platform because, you know, nobody really appreciates my opinion anyway. So I got to watch what I say here, you know?
The only reason I bring it up is because there are still two other competitions that Inter could be competing in right now that they aren't. And, you know, as happy as we are to go for the second star, it does kind of sting a little bit that, you know, we're not playing Champions League games coming up. You know, we only have the league to play. There isn't an opportunity at Coppa Italia, which I know is sort of people have really been down on it as a competition. But, you know, like, Milan is competing on three fronts right now, and it would have been nice for, you know, Inter to be able to do the same.
When you say that, though, would you rather be competing? Let's say we got knocked out in the group stage and we got bumped into Europa League. Would you really rather be competing for Europa League?
No, I wouldn't rather be competing for Europa League, but I think that this feeling comes from a place of, we built up such a large lead in the league, got knocked out of the other competitions, and are now not playing our best football as we go towards the finish line here in the league. So it feels, I don't know, like, there's something, I know that once the title is won, you know, it's not, who's going to care? It just feels...
I know, I get what you're saying. I just worry, like, what if we were doing this now on two fronts? Let's say we were putting in mediocre performances, not only in the league, but then also the Champions League, and we're made to, you know, look like, oh, look how overrated this team is. Oh, look how good Inter really is. Like,
yeah.
Listen, do I wish we were still in the Champions League? Of course, you know, but it's just, I don't know, man. Like, I don't think there is really any right answer or any right way to look at it.
You're what a luxury you guys have. You don't even realize it, you know? But so here, Ali, let me turn it back on to you. If I asked you before the season, you guys specifically, but any Inter fan, wouldn't your goal be to win the Scudetto?
100%.
I think so, yeah.
Based on the year you had last year, and obviously it's very easy to say it now when we're watching a very weak Bayern Munich, a very weak Barcelona, a very weak PSG. Typical contenders, but wouldn't you say you want to win the Champions League if I asked you this in September or August?
Why can't
the team come out and say it?
It's a good point. It's a good point.
Yeah, no, that's a great point.
Especially with how we've seen this Inter play. Like, you know, we're not playing in the Champions League, but I, you know, feel this team in a two-legged tie against Bayern or PSG, and I still feel like we beat them, right? You still feel like you could have done something. That's football, right? That's football. That's the sport. Sometimes it doesn't go your way, and, you know, you have these conversations and these discussions, but I am very, very excited to get that second star. But there is the bittersweet feeling of there's only seven games that we're playing in left. You know, it's once a week. I'm used to doing this pod three times a week. So it is what it is. But let's go ahead and get into this game. So first half, I mean, was all Inter. It was pretty plain to see what was going on. Inter was going to possess the ball. Udinese was going to put as many people in the box as possible. and try to hit us on the counter. A couple highlights to discuss. Çalhanoğlu whips in a shot that Okoye makes a great outstretch save on. I think it might have been heading out, but just the fact that he made that save was pretty impressive. I thought Okoye showed out today. Like, this was a real showcase for him.
Snap him up, bro. Snatch him up. Bring him in. Back up for the future. I'm okay with
Yeah, he gave away the penalty. He gave away the penalty for sure, and I don't know how good his distribution is, given that he wasn't in a team that was trying to possess the ball and really play out from the back. But as a shot stopper, definitely his stock is on the rise.
Yeah. No, you could see it in some of the even previous matches that Udinese had where he was the starter over Silvestri, which, I mean, having seen him recently, you wonder what was Silvestri doing to even remain the starter. But today, which it seems to be like, oh, we're playing Inter, you know, yeah, I have to play the best game of my career. That seems to be a common trend for goalkeepers in Serie A. Whether it's him, whether it's Consigli, whether it's, Montipo's even had some awesome performances where he probably saved Hellas from 7-8 goal losses. So, I mean, it's always fun to see what the keepers do when they go up against Inter. But he definitely looked like a fantastic goalkeeper with quick reflexes, strong hands in the box, but to make saves and parry them out and not put him in dangerous positions. You know, this may be a hot take, and it may be also some recency bias, but he kind of does, with his quickness, remind me of a young Handanovic. I don't know if, like you said, the distribution's going to be there or anything like that. But my goodness, like, the saves that he made were massive in the first half, and I was very impressed with him. And I wonder what he would cost in the summer, because obviously it doesn't look like Bento is going to be realistic, unfortunately, as much as I really want him and rate him. But maybe this is an option for the future of him if Bento or Di Gregorio aren't realistic ones.
Apparently Julio Cesar is on the Bento trail right now, so let's see if the legendary former Inter goalkeeper can
Julio
try to...
If Julio Cesar does that, I might name my first son Julio Cesar if he's able to get Bento to Inter.
That would be huge. But let's go. So Inter peppered some more shots. There's not really anything of note. Lautaro missed, you know, had a good opportunity and didn't have a great first touch. Çalhanoğlu also. Yeah, we'll get into that. But in the 40th minute, the last person that Interisti at least want to get on the score sheet is Lazar Samardžić. But he does in a way that, like, you know, he was obviously very happy. I don't know if you can really give him full credit. He did lash the ball across the box. It did take a deflection off of Augusto, but that's not even really what happened here. I'm going to play this video for you guys. It's really clear to me whose mistake this was, and I think I know who Johnny's going to say at least, so maybe we'll start with Nick on the Inter goal. Who is miscommunicating here that allows this ball to travel across the box as we're watching it right now? Dumfries steps to it. Sommer is completely standstill. Whose mistake was this?
I'm trying to figure out how misleading that view is, because it looked like about six guys were watching the ball, but in real time on replay, it is 1000% Dumfries who is to blame. I mean, he stopped his run. Dude, you're watching this ball the entire way, and you just literally stopped as it's coming towards you. So I don't have an explanation for it.
That is the answer. I'm gonna say my piece before I let Johnny take over here. That is the answer. A goalkeeper of Sommer's experience is not standing flat-footed in the middle of his net for no reason. Like, he's gonna go out and claim that ball. The only reason that happens is because Dumfries makes the move towards the ball and then just stops. And it doesn't make any sense. Your preference would be for Sommer to come claim that. But if you're going to move towards the ball, you now own that situation. All right, Johnny, take it away.
We cannot be surprised anymore by how dumb of a player Denzel Dumfries is. And for him to react the way he did, as if that was all Jan Sommer's fault, is mind-boggling to me. You see it clear as day that he goes towards the ball and takes one final lunge, and then it's almost like he just full stops. And then before the ball even enters the net, he's already like arms outstretched, blaming Jan Sommer for not coming out. Where any goalkeeper in their right mind, especially when you see the ball coming in with that much time, and you see your defender coming towards it, because what could happen, he'd probably also stop because he's like, if I overcommit and this guy mishits it and it goes straight in the middle, I'm again in the wrong position. So he probably stops thinking, okay, best case scenario, if he mishits it, I'm already in position to make this save. But Denzel Dumfries does... Well, I really can't even say that I'm surprised by it, because this is the kind of stuff that he does. If you look back even last season against Juventus, when he refused to close out Filip Kostic and allow him to just take a wide open, like free shot, blocking Onana's view on top of it all, and then able to put it in the bottom corner. This is the kind of defender he is. He is an actual liability in defense. I said it last week. I feel much better with him coming off the bench and being an impact player, where he actually is able to do more in attack than Darmian has been able to do as of late. He does deliver some decent crosses. I'm not trying to negate any positive things he's ever done, but in defense, the guy is completely useless. And I cannot wait till this summer when we find out that Manchester United or Chelsea or some other EPL club, I don't care, it could be Sheffield, it could be Brighton, you want him? 15 million at this point. I don't even care what the price is. It's a profit, whether it's 2 million, 3 million. Just get him out of here. I am so tired of seeing him just do dumb things like this. Like, and some people were trying to blame Sommer.
Who is trying to do that? Who is doing that?
There are people. There are people. There are people. Huyan was, of course, one of them. But then there are other people who are trying to blame Sommer, and it kind of just blows my mind. Like,
it was like watching a car accident in slow-mo. Like, you know when you know you're about to see a car accident or like a train derail? Like, that's exactly what this play looked like.
Driving on I-95?
Nailed it.
Down in Miami, right? Yeah. No, it was painful to watch, and I just don't understand it. I don't understand how you stop that, like that run. You easily could have just kept going.
If he hesitated because the ideal clearance out of the box would have been with his left foot, like drive your left foot through it and just clear it out of the area. The way that he was taking
there was
an angle
nobody
to the
near
ball.
Him that in Udinese kit, so like he literally could have stopped it with his left foot. He could have like literally stood on the ball, done like a little seal turn if he wanted to, and then kicked it with his right foot. He had all the time and space in the world to be able to do whatever he wanted in that situation. I don't understand why he stops.
This is what we get for saying hopefully he gets showcased down the stretch and increases his price. Because that's
you said
not
that. I.
That's
I mean,
yeah.
I you're right.
I did say that. But the thing that is like I can't get over is that he's 27 years old. Like you have established yourself as a footballer for a long time. It's an amateur.
Has he established himself as a footballer? Has he?
He's playing at Inter, one of the greatest.
I mean, he's
clubs
done a really good job
of
fooling
time.
People that he's a footballer. Fantastic job of that. Honestly, wasn't there a guy who got in trouble? I forgot what club it was in the EPL, but he wasn't actually a player, but he actually was able to get minutes in a game. I think it was for like
Beto?
Portsmouth or something. Who would you say?
Beto?
No.
He's definitely not a footballer.
Yeah, no, don't. I have a bet with another Interista that Beto won't even score 5 league goals.
You could cash that now. I think he's got
two or three. I told him. I was like, bro, you might as well send him money now because I think he's sitting on two, maybe three. Yeah. I think he's at three in all comps.
There
I think he's
go.
At two in the league.
Yeah, yeah. Two in the league.
Anyway.
One miss PK.
Nick, anything problematic with how Lazar celebrated that goal, acting like a big tough guy there in that moment?
I knew I was coming on the show. I didn't know if I was going to bring an agenda with me or not. But I know Gianni, and let me set the record straight, not only as my friend, but as a person who I am on his show. I talk to him regularly. I read his tweets. I very much so appreciate your knowledge of this sport. I think, you know, I enjoy talking to you about it. You know what you're talking about. You watch a lot of different leagues, a lot of different players. Like, there's a lot of people who we talk to that are, you know, they know one team or one league. You're far beyond that category. So let me say that.
Appreciate that.
I don't know. I remember you being really, really excited about the fake news going around that this guy was coming to Inter and his dad has Inter underwear and he was going to solve all your problems. And I watched this game, dude. And like I said, I was going to come with this regardless to make a little bit of fun. I didn't really see anything out of this guy. Obviously, the goal he got, but ridiculously fortunate. We just talked about it. He was not involved in anything. And any time he had the ball, he lost it. And he lost it pretty easily. Now he's young. He's on a not very good team. It's not me to say that he's not going to be something or he couldn't be an impactful player, but I haven't been all that impressed.
And
I certainly wasn't impressed this game.
He's frequently on the bench for a team that's been in the relegation fight all year for a player that has been wanted by Inter, Juventus, Napoli, you know, Premier League sides. It is strange how he has regressed in terms of, like, his ability, for sure, it's there. Like, it's very much there. Yeah. But as a player, he hasn't taken the next step of this is a can't-miss prospect. I don't feel the same way about him that I did in the summer. I also was super excited for what Inzaghi could do with him. But perception has to be changing around him.
For sure. I mean, I think, listen, I tweeted about it today that I don't think he's a bad player. I do think he is a puppet for his father, though. And his dad's just kind of using him to get rich in some way, shape, or form.
Sure.
It's a shame to see, you know, he does have some worldly goals. He does have fantastic dribbling skill, but it seems that when he has to go up against better competition, he comes up flat. I mean, you know, Victor and I were kind of going back and forth, and, you know, he didn't want to count the goal that he scored against Milan because he was saying, yo, it's Milan, look at them. But all jokes aside, like, yeah, like, I want to see you do something against a big club. And yes, he did score the goal, but any real team would not have allowed that ball to get through, you know, and like, a defender of even probably Trisoldi's quality tries to clear that ball out. And,
no,
you know,
no, I'm sorry.
I think so, man. Even Trisoldi might have done that.
I think you hit on a really good point.
Or he puts it in his own net. Like, he just whiffs and puts it, but at least he would have tried, you know, like, I just don't. Yeah, he wanted to act like he was the toughest guy ever with that goal.
Yeah.
Yeah, the pointing at his chest was like, relax.
Yeah, like, relax. Yeah, listen, yeah, I was like, buddy, you're going to stay at Udinese next year too. Like, at best you're going to a relegation side in the EPL. You know, like, there's
that's what I wanted to ask you guys, like, prediction here. Do we expect to see Samardžić in Serie A next season?
I do not expect to see him in Serie A next season.
Yeah,
if Udinese get relegated. Sorry, go ahead, Nick.
No. If they're going to try to cash in, you know, it ain't going to be from our league, right? They're going to have to go elsewhere to get that money. And I agree. I mean, do you slot him in at a team like Wolves, at a team like Everton, at a team like Bournemouth? Yeah, I think he could fit in. But you both made the same point, I think, a little bit differently. The thing that has to worry you about him this year is the lack of consistency. You know, you can't expect, you know, worldly goals. You're not going to get 10-15 from this guy age 22 from the midfield. But if you can't put in a full shift 90 minutes game in, game out, when your team's fighting for it, that's problematic. So I agree with both of your takes on that.
He's going to light the EPL up. Watch.
He might.
He's going to destroy
He's going to end up at, like,
the scenery's new. Yeah.
He's going to end up at either Leicester or Ipswich when they get right now they're kind of tight in that race, but I think either one of them gets promoted, they're probably going to try to bring a player like that in. But I don't see him going to, like, a top-tier club. You've seen that Juve's kind of already shifted to, like, potentially, like, Coop Miners and Lewis Ferguson.
Yeah.
We don't have a need for him with Zielinski coming and all the depth that we have really there.
Like, could I see him go to a team like Napoli, maybe? You know, that could be a natural
I could step see that. Up.
But I think he already burned that bridge now the flirting with Juve. You know, like, he could have gone there in January. It looked like that was almost done. And then all of a sudden, oh, no, we're waiting for Juve. Like, buddy, get your life in order. Like, stop. It's kind of embarrassing, you know, seeing it
as a guy. Might have pissed off Serie A presidents, like, multiple at this point.
Yeah, at this point, like, your dad is ruining your career. Like, you need to either step in and take control of your situation and be like, hey, back off. Like, I'll take care of you. Let me figure out where I want to go first. Like, not be so involved in that, this aspect of it, because you're literally burning bridges before you can even get to these clubs. And I think that's going to look like, you think that, like, club presidents don't talk with one another about these kinds of things, and they don't share, like, hey, no, this, his dad's impossible to deal with, like, go after someone else. Like, you're who, like, maybe teams that wanted Samardžić end up going after someone like Kolpani, or they end up going after, you know, some other talent that's in the midfield in Serie A, or they go looking elsewhere. Because if this is the kind of dealings you're going to go through, where, you know, your father, you know, derails a deal over 500k in bonuses or 300k in bonus, whatever it was, that 300k that ended up ruining it, you know, like, is it worth it to ruin your career so your dad can make a little buck too? You know, I don't think so. And I'll be honest, like, if my dad did anything like this to me, I don't even know if we would really be talking, like, for a while. Like,
the thing is that none of our dads would do something like that. Like, that's not, you know what I mean? Like, not like,
my dad would only intervene if Juve was trying to sign me. I think that's the only time he would really get involved, but that's right. It.
Anyway, the first half ends with a break from Inter. DiMarco crosses it to Lautaro, and then another spectacular save from Okoye. Inter finished the first half with 0.5 in XG compared to 0.08 from Udinese, yet we went into the break 1-0 down. When we do these game recaps, I use FotMob to keep track of what happened during the game, because they have a pretty good ticker. And I just want to bring up something real quick just to upset Johnny. They described the Samardžić goal. Samardžić deflected low cross, bamboozled Dumfries and Sommer before nestling in the corner of the net. Yeah,
good copywriters.
That's probably the best description you could have given to that goal.
Bamboozled that's Sommer too.
Poetry.
Unbelievable.
I mean, yeah, I guess they were all bamboozled. I think even Samardžić was bamboozled that it ended up in the back of the net, because I guarantee you that was not his intention.
No, not at all. All right, second half starts. 3 minutes into it, Inter think they have equalized. DiMarco puts a free kick into the box. It comes off Lautaro, then hits a defender's arm, and then gets into the path of Augusto, who puts it in the back of the net. The goal is ruled off. As far as my understanding is that even though it came off of the Udinese player, off of his hand, no less, the fact that when Lautaro took the action to head the ball, Augusto was already offside, and that's why they ruled it out. I was struggling to understand from the clips. It looks pretty clear to me that the goal was good, but apparently, according to the rules, that's what it is. You know, if that's the case, not going to argue it. Probably would have argued it a little harder if Inter didn't pick up the 3 points here, but that's what happened there. Nick, for you, you know, would you have given that goal? Is that?
Yeah, I think your frustration is my frustration, is everybody that watches the game's frustration. Just the clarity behind the decisions never seems to be there until after the game. So if what you're saying is true, and I mean, my first thought was offside just because of how far forward Augusto was. But, you know, it is kind of is what it is. Weird that the hand wasn't looked at. Like you said, it's off his hand, but I don't know who's in the decision room or what they're saying. We're not getting that transparency. So could have kind of seen this go either way. I think they were leaning offside from the start, or I don't know, you know, I think more of like hockey, like what's the call on the field, right? What's the call on the ice? Like, hey, if this was called a good goal, they probably would have pushed a little harder to confirm that. But it seemed to me like offside was kind of the preconceived notion before it even went to check.
Yeah. And Patrick Hendrick also tweeted, same as Juve's goal disallowed against Lazio in the Coppa, just because an opponent plays the ball doesn't mean it's a new phase of play. So the offside
from when Lautaro touched it and Augusto's positioning supersedes what happens in the following action. So looks like it was a good call. Johnny's sitting there with a face right now.
Yeah, I mean, like, I to me it was, not that I disagree with the call, I just, unfortunate for sure, you know. Hey, at least it didn't come back to, like, bite us really at the end, so kind of like water under the bridge, really.
Yeah. 5 minutes later, Inter does get the equalizer, though. Penalty, another cross into the box that Thuram gets on the end of, but is taken out by Okoye. For me, very, very clear. I think, again, some rival fans on Twitter are trying to call Marotta League on that. It's impossible to call that. It was a very clear foul. And Çalhanoğlu puts it away for his 10th goal of the season. It looked like Lauti picked up the ball and wanted to take it. And I think all Interisti's hearts were in their stomachs at that point. Knowing the last time Lautaro took a penalty and how it ended up. But nonetheless, Inter equalizes. Johnny, anything to say on that penalty to the people who may be crying Marotta League?
Yeah, go ahead and look back at the penalty that Jan Sommer was called for. And tell me which one was more clear of an impediment. There we go. Thank you. But let me tell you guys, if you don't know this, Alessandro got a 2400 on his SATs. The guy was perfect on it. So that's
when
why
I
his
grew
English
up,
is so much
it was
better.
1600, but I guess I
mean,
was a little bit younger.
I mean, me
than
too, but yeah. I'm just assuming.
Listen, eighth grade finished 16th in the New York State Spelling Bee. So I really, I'm
better
for 16,
you though, people. So no, but yes, impediment. Thank you. Then Sommer's was. So Sommer actually made contact with the ball. Okoye doesn't. Like that. I don't know. I don't know what people would really be complaining about. I'm sure if your favorite team had the same instant and it was called, you would be thrilled and happy that you got the penalty, or you'd be screaming for a penalty. So, you know, as soon as I saw it, I was like, pen. Like I didn't even worry about it. I was like, you know, we've set the standard with what a penalty is between what, you know, if a goalie is able to punch a ball or not. This one, he clearly does not make contact. Penalty. Like, I mean.
Thuram got the ball. It starts and ends there for me.
Does it feel like this season with penalties on goalkeepers for fouling attackers, it's been a lot more prevalent? I don't remember a season
never
that had this
before.
Many. Yeah. Yeah. This many of those type of fouls given for penalties. But regardless, we move on. Johnny, any praise for the impediments that Mkhitaryan made in the 65th minute for an on-rushing Kamara playing the ball across to Toban, and he made an outstanding tackle, it has to be said.
Yeah, no, definitely outstanding tackle. Probably the only good thing he did all game, let's be real. Like, I don't think there was anything else that he did right.
Yes.
I was actually surprised he even ran back that much, so.
Oh, come on.
Tip of the cap.
He's a runner.
Yeah, okay. All right. Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
All right. Tip of the cap to Henry, Mkhitary. And no, I know it's Henry, but yeah, tip of the cap to him for that. That was obviously like a great effort. Great ability to not only get on it, but also like not commit a foul on Toban to give up a penalty there either. So yeah, no, but very, very happy with that effort for sure.
Nothing huge came until the goal in the 95th minute, and we'll talk about that in a second. But let's just touch on Inzaghi's subs here before we do that. Fratesi and Darmian come on in the 68th minute for Dumfries. And then I think, did Fratesi come on for Mkhitaryan? What did you think about those subs in the moment, Johnny? I was happy to see Fratesi, obviously. I felt like we needed to throw a little bit more of an attacking influence. I was a little worried about getting caught out behind since that was the only way Vanessa were bringing the ball up the pitch. And the Darmian one, I thought it was interesting that he went there instead of Buchanan. He eventually got to Buchanan, but you know, when I saw the Darmian for Dumfries, I was a little like, I don't know if if this is the kind, this is the profile of player we need on the pitch tomorrow.
Yeah, he definitely wasn't the guy that I wanted to see come on in that instance. I mean, we know he's always going to protect his boy Mkhitaryan. He doesn't want him to get a second yellow and then miss the next match. Like he's gonna protect Mickey always. Like for whatever reason, like that guy could not miss a game for him. Happy that Fratesi came on. Yeah, same thing. Same thought with Darmian. Like I was a little worried. I'm like, this guy doesn't really offer much as he used to going forward. So like, here we are chasing a winning goal. Why are we bringing on a defensive minded player? Obviously, we did see later on what happened and who was able to come on. But in that moment, I was not thrilled with the move.
Nick, any thoughts there on the frat party coming into?
Yeah, listen, I think it was the move to make. You guys talked about it. Mkhitaryan really outside of that one play, he had a poor game, I thought. So it was obviously the move to make. The question I have for you, and I mean, maybe I'm jumping the gun because I know how you structure our talks. Is Augusto just completely unable to play on the right side? Like, are we ever going to test him on the right? I think that seems to me like, man, could that be a solution, or am I just nuts?
I don't think Augusto is. I've seen him come inside a little bit and try.
Well, he was
with
all
his
over
right
the place
foot
in this game, which was like, yeah. And I'm sorry again if I'm getting ahead of myself. To see him and DeMarco both start on the left side to me was like, have they tried that before, or was this the first time? Because I don't
remember seeing
them like where Augusto one's been subbed back on, but from the start, yeah. Has it ever been this type of formation?
We've seen Augusto at left center back before with Darmian. I think he actually likes that look because Augusto is such a physical defender. Like, he doesn't really lose any one-on-one. So, you know, with Bastoni getting some rest here, he likes the way that looks. I don't think Augusto can play at right wing back. Another one who didn't have a great game, and I think in the last pod, Johnny and I were talking about Fratesi and Augusto making some more appearances for this team down the stretch to switch up the look. But yeah, that wasn't too surprising to see him from the start there.
Yeah, so I guess my only I thought they were probably the right subs at the time. I mean, I haven't seen him. I've only seen hype from all of our Interisti Canadian friends on Twitter. Buchanan, to me, man, like, there's got to be a reason why not only is he not getting any starts, but he's not even getting to be, you know, the first sub for Dumfries, and that's the actual position he's supposed to play, if I'm not mistaken. So
yeah, there's, when we saw him come on, I thought he was a spark plug for sure. Like, he definitely, every appearance that he's made, he's been a spark plug. So it is interesting. I think Johnny had an interesting theory for why Buchanan hasn't been playing on Twitter. We got that notification came through. Johnny, you want to tell everyone what's going on? Why TJ's not
I don't know
playing?
If I should say this. You know, no. Listen, I said he must have definitely hit on Simone Inzaghi's daughter or something to not warrant an opportunity to come on, because in the limited minutes that we've been able to see him play, the guy's been a spark plug. He's willing to take on his man. He's got pace. He's actually delivered some good crosses, which was something I was actually worried about before we signed him. You know, I didn't know if that was a strength in his game. I never really saw it from any time that I saw him play with Bruges or Canada. He had a few good crosses there for the national team at the World Cup, and we saw him be able to score some big goals. But like, was something that we've been missing was another crosser, especially on the right side. We already know what we have with DeMarco. You know, is he going to be able to bring that? And so far, it's been pretty good. The effort's always there too when he comes on. Like, so I just don't get why he's not seeing more minutes. I don't. And my reasoning is because it's like, look what happened with Robin Gosens when he was able to get in, right? Not a lot of great things. We kept waiting for him to make that next step. We knew he was great at scoring goals, but he wasn't great at taking on his man. Wasn't really the best at crossing. He had pace. He was a hard worker. But it's like, you want to see what you have. You want to be able to see, like, is this the right guy? Did we make the right investment? Or do we need to address this in the summer? I feel like when you wait and wait and wait, Then you go into the summer, you have the friendlies, you have the preseason, but then you still don't even know if he's the right player. Like, at least now you can get some minutes out there. I'm hoping, I really am hoping that he gets to start the game against Cagliari, because it's like, what are you waiting for? Really, what are you waiting for? Like, you see the impact that this guy has. You look at what he did even today, right? Great effort defensively. Good slide tackle there to kind of prevent an attacking play. Really good clearances. Like, some people may want to take an extra step, or he was just like, get it out of here. Didn't want to give any chances. I like that. I feel like that's a very smart thing. You also don't see that a lot with young players. Like, they try to maybe beat their man. They think that they could, you know, yeah, they try to do too much. They want to play a little hero ball. And I think that he's doing the smart things. Yeah, it's not the prettiest, but I'd rather have a guy who knows what to do, what the situation is, and how to handle that instance. And I think he would be able to do that from minute one as well. I just don't get what we're waiting for.
I'm surprised that his two-footedness is so good. Like, I'm surprised at how adept he is with both feet. That's not something
he's the Maple Micon, baby. Like,
coming into this. And I think, Johnny, to your point of, like, why aren't we getting an extended look at him, knowing that he's likely going to be a big part of the team next season, with Dumfries likely on his way out. I think Inzaghi is waiting for the title to be wrapped up. I think he is waiting for after the derby, because you do have four more games after the derby at the end of the season where he can give him an extended run. Obviously, it's not a ton of game time, but I think that is what he's waiting for. And he's relying on his guys before he has to really dip into the Tejan bag. But, you know, we'll see how things play out in the future. But like we've said, he was good coming on. And he came on in the 81st. Prior to that, Alexis comes on for Çalhanoğlu. We go to a three-man front line and a midfield of Barella and Fratesi. This made me real nervous, because not only do we not see the three forwards for Inter very often, we have seen Inzaghi go to that in the past, but a midfield of Barella and Fratesi feels very easy to bypass. So I was pretty worried about what was going on, but it also clearly showed Inzaghi's intent to, like, let's get this done now. Like, let's not have any, you know, even though it would be a point coming down the stretch and we're not really in a danger zone of screwing this thing up. It was good to see that he wanted to get it done there. Eventually, Arnautović comes on the 81st for Thuram. Thuram really not looking himself lately. And then eventually, 95th minute, we come through. Lautaro lets it fly from the edge of the box. Okoye with an amazing save. Another amazing save, but unfortunately hits the inside of the post. Hits the inside of the post. Dribbles across the box, and once again, Fratesi's there for the late winner. Finds his way somehow, some way. He's always going to be there when in the box when we need him. Puts it away. Game ends. Inter takes home the 2-1 victory and another 3 points here. Johnny, I'll ask you, Fratesi's season, right? Not a ton of starts out the gate for his first season at Inter. Not a ton of minutes, but has been a difference-making player. And when I say difference-making player, I mean extra time goals on multiple occasions that have won us the match. When you, obviously the season's not over, but when you look back at this season, are you ultimately going to say this is a positive one for him, given that it's his first season in the Inter colors and we'll see, you know, some more of him next year, hopefully. But is this going to be a positive season for Fratesi when it's all said and done?
Yeah, I think when you look at it, at least statistically speaking, it'll be the positive season, especially with his goal scoring prowess. The magnitude of the goals that he scored, I think that's really huge. But like I've said, with my only issue with him is, like, there's things that I expect from a midfielder in terms of being able to move the play, passing. I just don't see that from him yet. Great in the box, fantastic. He always seems to be in the right place at the right time, which I think is huge. I don't want to compare him to this player, but it's a little Jude Bellingham-esque because of, you know, the way that they're able to just score goals. But then I also think about it, like, Is he ever going to be the one to provide that assist, though, that leads to a goal? Is he going to be the one to play that ball, to have the wherewithal to cross it at a certain time or play the perfectly weighted through ball? I have yet to see that. I'm hoping it develops. And and the fact that the player addresses that gives me hope as well. You know, like he recognizes the shortcomings in his game. But when you just look at it from the goal scoring and what he's been able to do, I mean, massive, massive finishing. And, you know, some people will just say, oh, there's tap-ins, you know, you're supposed to do that. Sure. You know, I mean, I would have been very upset if he hit that wide or hit it off the crossbar and it didn't go in. You know, a lot of things could have gone wrong, but
harder than it looks.
Yeah, it is. It really is. Like, people will be like, oh, look, it's so simple. Like, I mean, look at Gagliardini. You know, people want to crucify him for the one that potentially may have cost us the Scudetto 2 years ago. And listen, I'm not his biggest fan. I know people are going to bring up other stuff. The fact that I own a Gagliardini jersey. It's not as easy as it looks. It really isn't. Hats off to him for finishing in that and obviously, again, positioning himself properly. Also having the wherewithal to stay onside. You know, a lot of young players are going to want to push forward and be able to just get in and be there already. If you look before he makes the run, he sees the center back to his right where he is. And then once he sees he has a little time and the ball comes off, and then he starts making the move, which I think was, I mean, just brilliant heads-up play there. So, yeah, I'm happy with the goal. I would say it's a good season just because of the statistics, but I do want to see more growth in the passing aspects of his game.
Let me double down on that. I think he's had a good season. I think some of his, you called them shortcomings, we've seen glimpses of it. You know, with Sassuolo, we've seen him, you know, glimpses of it on the national team. The biggest thing that he has that you can't teach, that you can't practice, the instincts. You mentioned it, right? They might look like tap-ins to others, but you're not in that spot if you don't have the right instincts. And he is all around the ball at all times. I think that's huge. I don't think Inter bought him. I don't think he came to Inter to sit on the bench long-term. Obviously this year, very difficult to get into a squad that's firing on all cylinders, but now he's not the same player, but Mkhitaryan's what, 35, 36 years old?
35.
Has to be Frattesi's spot next year. Whether the formation stays exactly the same, whether other components have to move around, but I think he's done more than enough to at least get the chance to be a starter for next season, and I can't imagine why you wouldn't want him to be. Even this game in his limited time, wants the ball, not afraid to shoot, not afraid to be in the mix, no matter where that is. So I personally, as an outsider, am impressed.
Yeah, and also let's give a little shout out to Arnautovic with the patented back heel flick that he just loves to throw out there right into Alexis's path, but he couldn't get on it.
But he couldn't play it. Again, that's probably the greatest thing that Alexis has done, was not be able to control a ball so that somebody else can take a shot, because he probably would have put that well over the crossbar, and we're not even talking about this winner. So,
yep.
Yeah. No, I'm happy with that. Like Nick said, you know, like, we've seen glimpses of it. We hope to see, like, the growth, of course, and stuff like that. Only thing I would disagree with is I do think that when Zielinski comes, he's going to be the guy to kind of take that starting spot.
Forgot about him.
Agreed, yeah.
No worries. You're not an Inter fan. You know, you got Bologna on the mind. You know, you're worried about who's leaving.
Everybody.
it's a huge goal. Çalhanoğlu, player of the match. Like, come on.
That's a mistake.
Up here? What are we pulling up?
I'm not
here?
Pulling it up for the things. I'm just pulling it up, man, so that we can see.
But that, even before the goal, I mean, that first half, he was everywhere. I mean, they could have had two or three.
He was everywhere, but he was also misplaying passes.
Yeah, you know, he misplayed. Like, he definitely was not standard of a good Çalhanoğlu game.
DeMarco for me, but you can't really argue with Hakan either. I feel like the first 60 minutes was him.
So we're at an hour and 5 minutes here. So instead of going through the whole team, let's each take a player performance
that we liked and that we didn't like to discuss. We'll let's try to get some different players here. So, for me, I'll start.
All right, you go. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to start with a player performance that I really liked. DeMarco was really up for it today. Like, very, very, the intent was definitely there. In the first half, I think he created three chances by himself. He was dangerous. He was also getting into the box on the end of runs. And the intent was there. Like, he was definitely up for it. He could have had some assists today if the finishing had been better, or not even if the finishing had been better, if Okoye wasn't as good as he was today. For me, DeMarco, great performance. And then as far as a low performance, I'll take Acerbi here, out of it, really out of it. Misplaying passes, letting Tovan win aerial duels against him, letting him hold up the ball against him. Maybe for me, the worst Acerbi performance this season. Just did not look comfortable, not understanding why. It's not like he's missed time for a suspension or anything. So it's a little concerning that he wasn't able to get it going today. Again, it is just one game, but it also really opens it up for me of, like, I am ready for an investment to be made at center back. We've seen guys like Buongiorno, Bukema linked to Inter. So I'm very, very curious what happens with that spot once Acerbi is done, because I am not expecting the high level of play that we've seen from him the past couple seasons to continue in the next year. Not good today. All right, Johnny, player performance you liked, player performance that let you down.
Real quick, it's come out, though, that Buongiorno has already told Italian players who are on Inter that he wants to come to Inter in the summer, which I love.
What did
his father
say?
I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, that's more important.
Simone Fregna is on it, so we'll get the answer soon, of course.
The most important thing there is Cairo, because I don't know that he loves dealing with Inter, so we'll see.
No, but he loves dealing with Juventus for whatever reason, which makes no sense. But
nope.
Anyway. Before we get into that, for me, listen, I'm gonna go out of the box here, and I'm gonna highlight a guy who was a substitute, and it's Tejan Buchanan for me. I loved what I saw with him out there. I think that he had a great cross that, had it not been Acerbi who was in the box, I think that you know, somebody else, whether it be Arnautovic, Lautaro, Turam, whoever else. I mean, maybe Turam might have been. Actually, if Arnautovic is on there, Turam's off. So Arnautovic, Lautaro, or Sanchez, you know, it was a perfectly weighted cross. Somebody could have got a foot onto it, I think would have done better than Acerbi in that situation. But I'm very very happy with his performance. And again, to have the mental aspect of it, knowing the magnitude of the situation that you're in, knowing that you're up by one goal, the clock's ticking down, to make two great and smart defensive plays there, I'm very happy with that. And I think that's very good for his own, I guess, confidence going forward. And then you saw how the rest of the team kind of surrounded him afterwards, you know, and kind of like we're congratulating him for his performance. I don't think that goes unnoticed with Inzaghi, and I'm hopeful that I'll, you know, be able to propel him going forward and hopefully get into the starting 11. Weakness, I'm not going to go after who you think I'm going to go after. I'm going to be, you know, somebody do it a little differently. I'm actually going to go with Benji Pavard. I think that he kind of caught himself a little bit out of place sometimes going forward. The passing was there for sure. I mean, but I just felt like the decision making with some of the passing was a little bit off. Look at that. Yeah, I was gonna say, like, some of his long balls, and now you're pulling up the stats. He was 3 for 5 on accurate long balls. I remember the two misses. And they actually led to some opportunities for Udinese to make the tech. Holy cow. 0 for 5 in aerial duels won. Like, that's brutal. Not great to see. I mean, listen, I don't like to go off stats, but to see that's kind of crazy to bring up. So, and then 6 duels lost, like you're highlighting there. My goodness, yeah, that's you hope for better. And who knows, maybe like this game will allow a guy like Bisek, who I do think is obviously much better in the air, an opportunity to perform. Another great thing out of this, though, is we saw that Bastoni didn't play. And when you have Bastoni and Bisek in there, I think that's a good combination for your center backs on the wings, technically. So
and he also picked up the yellow. That means that he's missing Gagliardi.
Yeah, that's why I said Bisek would probably be able to play that one because of that. So that's probably my disappointment of the match.
All right, Nick, on to you.
Yeah, listen, the easy answer is don't freeze, but for that, I applaud you, Gianni, for not taking him. The guy that stood out for me, I think Augusto, I kind of hinted towards it. He was really all over the place. I think he seemed pretty sound defensively when called upon, but just a good performance from him. He was in the mix. I loved what I saw. And like I said, for me, it was kind of the first time seeing him in that back three versus that mid five. Really impressed.
Yeah, five passes into the final third, 94% passing accuracy. So looks like he was pretty good. And then you said Dumfries was...
No, that's the easy way out. I'm going to go with Barella. Because I thought he was poor per se, but just not as noticeable as you wanted him to be in a game like this, in a game where you're down a goal going into halftime. I just felt like, and I think, you know, I've spoken about it with you both, you need him to take over games every now and then, and it's just something I didn't see. And this is a game where you expect
you
him
weren't
to
watching.
Do it.
No, I'm kidding.
Maybe I wasn't, but I feel like he needs to be a driving force in certain games, and I didn't see that from him today. And again, this is a game that Inter dominated. Not everybody played their best, but he's kind of an easy one to pick out for me, where I don't really remember anything he did after like the 20th minute.
I think the quality around him being so low today from a performance perspective probably led it to look like that, because I saw a lot of good running and a lot of good intent, and it probably would have looked better if the guys around him were in a little bit better form. But that's it. So Inter is, let's see, after 31 games and a plus 60 goal differential, that's fucking insane. 82 points ahead of Milan, plus 14 point difference. We're heading into the final stretch here, 7 games left. Looks like we can clinch during the derby. At this point, it would take Inter dropping points in all of these next 7 and Milan winning all of these next 7 for Inter not to be confirmed as champions. So let's see how it shakes out.
So you're telling me, Lenista, there's a chance.
There is a chance. Mathematically, there is a chance. Inter would have to drop points in every single game. Every single game left. And Milan has to win all of them. I could definitely see Milan winning all of them. I don't see a scenario.
Ladies and gentlemen, you just heard him say that he could see them beating Inter.
No, I'm just saying.
You said all of them.
No,
Inter happens to be among all of them.
Oh, right. Inter. Yeah. You're right. I didn't. I didn't realize. Mm. Yeah, Inter is on the table for them. No. So listen, that is the
right, that's where
stakes
we clinch
here. At hand, so I'm hoping that we do clinch against Milan. I really wanted it to be against Cagliari and be able to celebrate while being in Milan, but I'll take a win any chance I can get it. So, all right, Gianni. All right, so next time out, by the way, I think what we should do is I'm not going to be able to do the full pod, but maybe if you bring on a guest, I'll call in and do a little guest spot and then head out after the Cagliari game. But I think that's the way to go. Other than that, Gianni, I think you have a giveaway to announce or something special
I put it up on Twitter, giving away a graded Tejan Buchanan card. Yes, he's in a Club Bruges kit, but it's still black and blue. So you can kind of, you know, if you keep it far enough on the shelf, you know, you can make people think that he's in a Inter kit. But Yeah, we're going to give it away. I was going to give away a Marcus Thuram autograph card if he scored. Obviously, he did not. So who knows? Maybe
saving that happens
later. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe I give away something else. I mean, we'll see. It really depends on what mood I'm in. So, but we are going to be giving away that card.
It's one of the biggest storylines of the season is Johnny turning into Santa Claus this season.
I love it.
I don't know what's gotten into me.
You're just generous. Cards. Just a generous guy. Just
giving away cards.
All right, Nick. Thanks for jumping on and joining us.
Nick might be joining next game too. If the Florida Panthers don't have, you know, a home game that night, stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen.
That's pretty much the only qualification of me being on or not, man. Check
Nick,
the schedule
plug your stuff here. Let the people know where they can find you.
I appreciate you guys having me on as always, and it was fun to be on all together. I think that's a first for me, so usually I'm filling in. Kicks and Picks podcast, man. We're breaking down Serie A Premier League from a betting standpoint. If you guys are into betting, if you're new to betting, you have any questions, typically try to have a little fun, give out a couple bets, and we had a rough start to the year, but we are back positive, trending in the right direction. So would love a follow.
Let's go.
Go to him for the soccer ones. Go to me for the hockey ones. I helped him with a hockey parlay. So,
and
there you go.
What's up?
The very best thing, anybody that gambles, you can agree with this. And if you don't, try it out. There's nothing better than like cashing a play with a friend of yours. Like when you're both on the same thing,
when you're both on
the
same
thing.
One.
And I don't listen, yeah. Man. I don't need to be the fucking smartest guy on the planet. I want to win money, right? Like you want to win a bet. I don't care who it comes from, whether I had anything to do with it or not. And Johnny and I have been going back and forth, and it's the best.
Yeah, go to these guys for your betting. Come to me if you need any vocabulary help. And the Interviews Pod perfect. Guys, they're always here for you. All right, guys, in the words of the great Roberto Scarpini, forza ragazzi, forza ragazzi, forza ragazzi.